The following narration has been put together by me, Kevin Smith, based on a suggestion by Dwayne Heppner. It embodies various dream experiences by myself and also my mother, Gwen, and father, Peter. In order to maintain some kind of continuity and perhaps make it more listener-friendly, I have included my own links and additional commentary. I have, however, I believe, remained faithful to the actual dream contents, which already exist on Skypes previously recorded by me. On the occasions of the telling of the dreams by the persons concerned. In furtherance of this, each person will read out their own dreams. I hope you will find it interesting and entertaining. So there we were, Gwen, Peter, my parents, and I. I was their son, the position I currently occupied in this lifetime, and with the name of Kevin. We had all wound up on this rather boring rock called Earth, and up until now, we had done what everyone generally does. And indeed, what we had undoubtedly done for lifetimes immemorable. That of creating ideas, chasing this and that, and going round in perpetual circles. Always finding ourselves back in another life in creation once again. This lifetime, however, had the promise of something new. We had all found a means by which potentially we might remove ourselves from the endless dreariness of a life predominantly controlled and restricted. We had found the connection to the real universes and the is. That which is beyond creation, and should we continue, we may some day recognize this is and be with it. A long process stretched before us, but the new you connection and the real guides who were representatives of the is would gradually remove the restrictions and agreements that had us bound into this very limited spot we had found ourselves in. Another part of the new song was that we were each now receiving far more expansive experiences in our dreams than ever before. The dreams were now demonstrations and experiences on what is termed the real side, put together by the guides to assist in us each becoming more aware that we might better recognize the is. The experiences are very exhilarating, like adventures, as we gallivanted across creation, all the life levels that were a part of it, and the real universes. The doorbell rang. The dogs went berserk. Various and colourful expletives issued forth in an attempt to restore silence, which wouldn't be so until the door was opened. Trying to distract one of the dogs with a half-chewed tennis ball, I would take a peek through the net curtains and my worst fears were confirmed. There stood my irritating sister. The explanation for the reason I refer to her as such is her inability or reluctance to accept, much beyond, the literal physical level she resided in, and so I would find her dismissal of anything I might mention in regards to the is and the adventures that stemmed from it, well, irritating. In she came, the dogs settled, and she seated herself. I was preparing to leave the room, for what, in fact, would be the point of my remaining. The conversation would likely revolve around what she had had for dinner, and what all her various friends and their respective pets had done today, and other captivating topics of, what was for her anyway, topics of enormous magnitude. Surprised was I when she blurted out the unexpected news, that she had in fact had a series of dreams herself. So vivid were they, that she was shocked to her core. Before awakening, she had even heard the echo of the sound "knew you" in her ears. She knew of this word, as despite her disinterest, it would have been from me that she would have heard it. I explained to her, "It's the sound that connects one to the real universes. The guides then set up demonstrations and experiences to help an individual become more aware, to eventually perceive these real universes." Lindsay, aka my irritating sister, was for a wonder intrigued. Perhaps it was time to refer to her as something else other than irritating. My parents were nodding acknowledgements and making the appropriate encouraging words and sound effects. Lindsay now wanted to know more. She wanted to hear about these experiences and demonstrations, and so Gwen, Peter and I exchanged looks. A glance at the clock. It was early in the evening. Plenty of time was available. We would share our experiences, our adventures. She would hear it all, even if some of it would sound a little fanciful and at times hair-raising. I turned to Peter, giving him the floor and opportunity to begin. Then, Peter.
I found myself in a street. I was uncertain where exactly I was. I had the old feeling it was France. I confess to never having visited France before. There were no vehicles. I was hoping to spot a number plate that would allow me to readily identify my location. As I was pondering this, a crowd of children passed me. It seemed to be a charity event or something of this nature. As I was watching this procession of children, I recognised a woman who was accompanying them, an individual called Chrysella, an old friend I knew from the physical level. I tried to attract her attention, but on she went with all the children. I was losing sight of them, despite having what seemed to be a somewhat... despite having what seemed to be something like a skateboard. Finding myself now in a harbour area, I pondered yet further, a little dismayed at losing my friend. The feeling of being left behind occurred and was most disheartening. I then found myself somewhere different again, in a hotel it would seem, at a window, apparently in the same location. The vantage point of being very high up afforded me sight once again of Chrysella. She was now accompanied by two individuals, one man and one woman, that I was unable to identify. Nevertheless, I was successful in getting her attention as I shouted from my position. She was then suddenly in the hotel with me and with her mysterious companions. Up a plush red carpeted stairway we went and into another part of the hotel, where a selection of waiters began to file in. They were burdened with trays of food, which they proceeded to spread over the tables there. I was a little perplexed, to say the least, somewhat embarrassed too, as another two individuals, a man and woman, entered the room and the food was seemingly for them. The lady sampled the food. It was to her disliking. Lady Claire, this was so, and departed. I deposited a £20 note in the pocket of the man as an apologetic, embarrassed gesture. Then once again, I was in a different part of the hotel. I was moving from area to area, as I did from the ground to the hotel initially, with no transition between each location. In a restaurant now, I was tucked in a corner. I was also under the steady scrutiny of what was the proprietor. At least I believed him to be so. He kept his unsettling gaze upon me. It made me feel very unwelcome. Then I woke up. Lindsay frowned, pulling a multiple of faces. It hadn't been a very extreme experience either, as some of what we would be recounting shortly would far more likely invoke incredulity. She folded her arms and asked as to the point of that demonstration. I explained. It was simply a scene, an entire set that was created by the real guides and built for the purpose of providing a theme or an element that I could extract from it. Each scene or dream demonstration has little gems in it to be recognized, which in turn assist in my building of my awareness. In this case, the theme was that of being left behind, as demonstrated in the beginning when I lost sight of Grisella. The idea was that of paying attention, for being left behind would be the result of not doing so. The real me, overseeing the events, had to do something quick. I'd lost sight of Grisella, and so the real me relocated myself in a position where contact with Grisella was re-established, then jumping into another scene. A little like missing a cab where someone else claims it, and you then jump into another one.
Lindsay, although adopting a less than convinced expression, had decided to stick around. She wanted to hear more. A promising sign indeed. I took a sip from my lukewarm cup of lemon tea. It was my turn to regale her with a real side experience. Then, Kevin. I found myself with a group. I had been on many adventures and experiences with groups of people. I tended not to recognize them, and further tended to have little concern as to their recognition. They were just there, accompanying me on my real side escapades. Occasionally, my group would have a few identifiable members, that of friends and individuals I knew on the physical level. It was explained to me that when we are with those we know, we tend not to consider it. And although my little self on waking would puzzle over the members of the group, it seems my real self knew them and that was enough. It's very possible they were the universal guides, even those I recognized, as these guides would frequently take on the guises of ones who are familiar to us. That we don't get too focused on the guides instead of the experience they are accompanying us on. We were assuming disguises. On the whole of it, I wasn't too impressed, as they consisted of robes with hoods, which covered the entirety of our bodies except the eyes. Seems we had a mission. We were to infiltrate a reptilian lair. On the surface, maybe not the greatest plan ever constructed. Coupled with the fact that any successful infiltration must surely rely on the quality of the disguises, and that ours were poor to say the least. I wasn't too enthusiastic about it all. We proceeded into the catacombs of the reptilian lair, and had gone but a few feet when we were halted. The disguises had proved to be as useless as I had suspected. Our covers were blown. A large female reptilian had spotted us. She loomed very tall and menacingly before us. I certainly wasn't prepared to antagonize her. I rather pitied the male she had as a mate, if indeed she had one. Surely he would be the one doing the dishes and ironing the reptilian pants. The game was up, but she was far from angry. She seemed rather amused at our trespassing. This would make sense, as after all, reptilians were masterful at disguises and were, in fact, master shapeshifters. Our attempt to conceal ourselves surely would have been very pitiful from her perspective. we were to accompany her. And it seemed a little pointless to do otherwise, as the whole objective of the exercise had been based on remaining hidden. My group and I followed this very large reptile along the passageways. I was curious as to where we might find ourselves. If the other members of my group were indeed guides, they gave no indication of knowledge of our destination. Eventually, we found ourselves in another area. It was a recreational area of a kind. I was of the assumption that since it was a reptilian lair, all areas would be awash with the lizards. But these seemed very human-looking. At least on the surface, perhaps reptilians in human form. Or maybe human minions of the reptilians. As I pondered all this, the reptilian female informed all those in this recreational area how we had been attempting to spy on them. You could have cut the silence with a reptilian blade, and it was rather plain to see the lack of amusement this news was met by the room occupants. At an almost subconscious cue from our reptilian female escort, the recreational area descended into utter chaos as the individuals engaged us in combat, tables and chairs overturned, bodies flying this way and that. It was a complete turmoil of mayhem. Oddly, it seemed that despite the furiosity of the brawl, none of us, they or my group, and I was sustaining the sort of damage one might receive, were such to occur on the physical level. And so it was actually rather enjoyable, and everyone was in fact having rather a good time of it, despite the nature of our interaction. What caused the cessation of our dust-up was the entrance of an individual who carried an air of authority. And there we all were, unharmed, as his character made his way to where I was standing. He greeted me and made a grand gesture. What he presented me with was a pizza, a little unusual, I suppose. It is a gesture of goodwill. No hard feelings, peace between species, said he. He must have known my weakness for this particular variety of human food, and the fact that I'd never had a reptilian dream pizza before had me consuming the offered gift. No sooner had I finished the last slice than he informed me that the pizza was not quite what it seemed. It is poisoned. I hope you delight in it, he sneered. I was beginning to wish we were still brawling. This was rather underhanded, very sneaky indeed. But I had the presence of mind to begin extricating the harmful effects of the tainted pizza from the vehicle I was currently in. Were you to ask how I knew to do this, I could not tell you, but my real self did, and my little self kept out of the way as I went about it. Unfortunately, the room was fading. I was about to return to the physical. I desperately did all I was able to rid myself of the poisonous effects of the pizza, but then I was back in my room. I groaned. I felt dizzy, rather out of sorts, and upset to my stomach. The effects wore away in due course, but it was evident they were the effects of the pizza. So the one thing I would take from that experience is, wear better disguises in future spying escapades, and if offered reptilian pizza, decline politely. Either they had strong constitutions, or they were bad cooks. Lindsay was looking a little green herself. The subject of reptilians had unsettled her somewhat, but she didn't seem about to run from the house screaming. She asked, in fact, if the reptilians were watching us all. I would reply, oh yes, all the time. Constant monitoring of the humans they see as their slaves. That is why the female reptilian was so amused at our puny spying attempts, I would say. It was time for me to refill my lemon teacup and give Peter the chance to speak more. Then, Peter.
And here I found myself in another street. It certainly was a night for street wanderings, but such a pity that I was met with such foul weather. Seemed I couldn't get rid of the miserable weather. That was the hallmark of the little island of the UK where I resided on a physical level. It occurred to me if this was perhaps in some way the UK, maybe a dimensional alternative version of it. All sorts of alternative visions of history could abound. Maybe there would be uncorrupt politicians or purple grass. But apparently the chances of good weather in any dimensional version of the UK was a stretch too far. It was raining. What a miserable experience. I looked about myself, peering through the drizzle to take note of my surroundings. There were people doing generally what people did, cars passing to and fro on the street where I was standing. I glanced up to observe a raised section of the street. Nothing very out of the ordinary again. More people were there doing what people do. Amidst the people doing their peopling activities was a frail old lady. She had drawn my attention, so it was possibly somebody I was to pay attention to and maybe speak with. What had alarm bells jangling in my rain-soaked head was the fact that the raised section, dangerously raised from the street level in terms of a distance, that wouldn't be very favourable to a falling body, had no guard railing. In fact, nothing could prevent an individual falling, and this little old lady was tottering ever closer and precariously to the edge of this safety barrierless platform. It seemed no one had noticed this potential unfolding situation. No one appeared to care. How typical of the human species. Something had to be done, and this mass of shuffling, zombified people were not going to lift a finger. So I scrambled up to the top of the raised section, and not a moment too soon, the lady was going over the edge. I seized her by the bony shoulders just as the last conceivable moment. But then a curious thing did occur. Still holding on to her, I floated gently down with her as though we were descending casually on a cushion of air or a fluffy cloud, and we safely reached the ground level. A peculiar situation. I scratched my head, my rain-soaked head, shrugged and wandered off down the street, and I seemed to have the theme tune from Christopher Reeve's Superman running through my mind. Lindsay chortled. She inquired as to the meaning of the dream, sarcastically asking if I was destined to be the world's first real superhero, that maybe his kryptonite would be a hamburger, me being a vegetarian. I explained, that's being far too literal. There was something in the dream I was meant to see, something that references me. I took it to demonstrate the sheep-like nature of the dumbed-down masses, too busy chasing their ideas than paying attention. An objective view then, at least proving that, although maybe sounding a touch arrogant, I'm one of the minority who are aware of what's going on. In the dream, only I noticed and came to the lady's aid.
I passed the biscuit tin to Lindsay. I had ensured the securing of all the custard creams, and would grin with a mouthful of them as she would rummage through the assortment, trying to find one I had missed. Placing the tin to one side, she was willing to hear more, and so, custard creams vanquished, I continued. Then, Kevin. I looked about myself. Nothing particularly exotic about my surroundings. A large, multi-storied car park dominated the scene. It wasn't anything beyond the mundane, simply that, a car park. It was there for a reason, as everything invariably is. So I approached it, and entered its concrete confines. I soon became aware that I was not alone. As I proceeded to explore, I discovered there were individuals everywhere, a combination of male and female humans. What would have been a very ordinary setting then became something else entirely. The females seemed to be the recipients, and indeed victims of the males, as the males were merrily passing the time, it would seem, by indulging their sexual impulses. They were attacking and raping the females. Honestly, such creepy and vulgar behaviour, this would never do. I became aware of a peculiar elderly fellow shadowing me also. He seemed not to be intending anything other than that, simply following me. Perhaps I might perchance speak with him later, but for now, my focus was on the grotesquerie of the situation I was confronted with. I sprung into action and took on the creepy males. I found I was utilizing superpowers of a kind. Instead of on foot, I would track down creep after creep by flying, a much better and efficient means of motion, and then seize creepy male after creepy male and halt their rape of the hapless females. Most I would hurl from my sight. Out into the street area below I would fling them. This was the justice I was bestowing upon them. As heroic a deed as this might sound, it was a deed with no end in sight. No sooner had I dealt with a creep, the piercing shrill cry of another anguished female would reach my ears, and to their rescue I would come. It was all becoming rather repetitive and a tad exhausting. Just how many females required my assistance in this car park of misfortune? It came as somewhat of a relief, in fact, when I awoke. Maybe a reminder of the futility of trying to fix aspects of creation, battling against the free will of others. Perhaps far better to let cause and effect karma deal with such situations. Lindsay would ask me if the females were grateful for my rescue of them. I pondered this, and the thought occurred that the entire experience had been a trap. The controllers were always seeking ways to seduce and entice individuals into situations for the purposes of doing just what Lindsay's comment had caused me to consider. A trap, then. The entire scene. Females and their supposed rapists too. And then, through such ploys, could agreements be made. It was through agreement to ideas the controllers created that one would find oneself trapped more so in creation. They were a cunning breed indeed, these controllers. I would endeavour to try and be more objective in future, to see things from far more viewpoints than just my created little personal self, for the betterment of my awareness and the avoiding of potential traps, snares, tap lines, and pitfalls. Ah, here's an interesting dream I will relay to you, Lindsay. This will be your first introduction to a universal guide, as one of them features in it, I said. Lindsay frowned. The concept of a guide was obvious, and the fact of the guide being referred to as universal naturally suggested a guide of the universe. I went on to give a brief explanation as to the nature of these guides, that they were, in fact, intermediaries between the Is and the individuals in creation, that they were responsible for providing the experiences and demonstrations in the dreams to stimulate an individual's real awareness. As it was only through awareness that one can perceive the Is and the real universes beyond creation. I finished by stressing the importance of seeing the new you to establish the connection to the Is, and the guides then would step in to assist an individual in their process. Ben, Kevin. Glancing around myself, I was in what I would describe as a transportation facility, like an underground tube station of a kind. It seemed I was alone, no other forms of life, man, reptilian or beast, and pleased that it wasn't another place full of creepy rapists. I didn't have to wait long for something to occur. A tremendous rumbling sound reached my ears. The facility shuddered and groaned, crumbling and beginning to collapse in on itself. There was only one course of action, that of vacating the vicinity, and I fled, reaching the surface just as the structure I had been in was completely demolished. Standing there in the aftermath and regarding the debris, it occurred that the demonstration indicated a releasing of an agreement, a tap line or attachment. The guides had a tendency to exaggerate dream demonstrations, as naturally these would demand attention and more likely remain in the memory on awakening. I was a little unsatisfied, however. Yes, I had the demonstration and had seen what it was representing, but nevertheless, I made a request for more information, a little curious as to the specifics of the explosion, and maybe added confirmation of my impression of what the destruction of the building signified. My request was seemingly granted. The entire demonstration replayed itself. Only this time, the cause of the destruction of the building was revealed. Reba's Artars, one of the universal guides, was there. He was rigging the building with explosives and revealed a large detonator, which he then proceeded to push down upon. It had the intended effect. The building was razed to the ground. Rebazar elected to remain in the building amidst the collapse. The explosive rigging was such that he could not have done otherwise. I had to smile as Rebazar, caught in the explosion of his own making, played dead, laying feet up, half buried in the rubble. Naturally, he wasn't dead. It was in fact impossible to kill a universal guide. I imagine he thought I'd appreciate the humour that the visual of this provided, and he was not wrong. I explained to Lindsay how it was enough for me to know that an agreement or an attachment had been severed, but on request of additional information, I was allowed to view Rebazar's involvement. I must have wished for a tap line or agreement to be removed, but incapable of doing it myself. The guide Rebazar assisted, as demonstrated by the destruction of the building. The guides cannot remove tap lines and attachments without permission, as it would be a violation of free will and pretty pointless to do so besides, because if an individual does not want to or isn't ready to have it removed, it will simply be re-established, the tap line reinserted. So here it's quite plain to see the effectiveness of the new you singing. The benefit of the real connection and the invaluable assistance of the guides. Lindsay wanted to know why Rebazar was playing dead, or was it simply for entertainment purposes? I explained how it was in fact another element of the demonstration, highlighting the fact that the tap line was in fact dead, and I was willing to have the restriction removed. For all the restrictions, agreements and attachments will keep us in creation, and generally in the first few levels of it also, so any opportunity to have them removed I would gladly take, and all help greatly appreciated. I wanted to impress upon Lindsay the vast scope and spectrum of experience that the real side dreams could provide, and the sheer endlessness that creation and all the life levels it encompassed boasted. It was time for an alien-orientated experience to be shared. Individuals of every shape, appearance, and culture imaginable and more lived throughout the psych realms. Some interacted and impacted upon humans. Many did not. But regardless of which category the species fell into, They could all be encountered on the real side through the demonstrations and experiences. Here was one such example. Then, Kevin. So, I would find myself in an intergalactic trading base. Aliens of every type and description were to be found here, all converging at this place, to trade their wares and trinkets from all the far-flung corners of the part of creation this base resided in. Some of the aliens were so beyond description that I won't even attempt to do so, and in fact, in this dream, I was an alien myself. The base, though a trading station, was not defenceless. It had the capability to repel attack. And although, generally, most aliens were here for the purposes of exchanging goods, always there was the risk of an attack. This was creation after all, and warmongers, space pirates, and no-gooders abounded in every corner. Some individuals simply preferred to steal and seize what they wanted. As for myself, I was, as I have mentioned, an alien. I didn't take the opportunity to determine my species. It never occurred to me to look at myself. When you're immersed in the experience and role within it, you tend not to consider yourself in regards to your appearance. Everything seems just as it should be, and only when you awake do you ponder over what manner of alien you may have been. I had a little spacecraft that I shared with another alien individual, the appearance of which I would approximate to a squid-like creature. The ship sharing was just not on the basis of a friendship, it would seem, but also a mutually agreeable, almost symbiotic partnership of a kind. What I exhaled, the squid alien would inhale, and vice versa, thus negating the necessity for the ship to provide whatever gas or element we each would have required for respiration. Amusingly of all, you were there too, Lindsay. You were an alien, and although we were at least on talking terms, we still seemed to be arguing over various things. Maybe I was trying to convince you of the existence of humans on a planet called Earth, and you simply couldn't conceive and accept of such a notion. I was in communication with all the aliens there. Conversation passed between us all. Even the subject of reptilians was discussed. Yes, it was determined that we would trade with the reptilians, as like all species, there were the good, the bad, and everything in between. But always we would be cautious, as they were not the most friendly and trustworthy species in the cosmos. There was one alien I was specifically trading with, and although alien, I recognised who this individual was, just as I recognised that other argumentative alien to be you, Lindsay. This individual was Charles. He is a new friend with the new presentation, now living in China, but originally from Africa on the physical level. I was trading with him what appeared to be something resembling hamburgers. Also in my cargo, I had little cakes that reminded me of muffins. I wasn't prepared to share my muffins. I was, in fact, keeping their presence a secret. Lindsay wasn't very amused at the idea of being an alien, but didn't seem at all surprised that we had been arguing over something, despite what part of the universe we were in, or vehicles we were occupying. I explained how the demonstration was all about sharing, how all the aliens, just like the individuals in the new presentation, were sharing and benefiting from the sharing, supporting each other, and the fact Charles was there to emphasise this more so. The fact I didn't want to share whatever my muffins represented suggested there was something that I should be sharing that, for whatever reason, I haven't done as yet. Maybe I am not yet aware of what it is that I ought to be sharing, that may be unveiled in time, as we must face ourselves and all of creation, shine a light on all those areas of our created consciousness, as unpleasant as some of the gloomy recesses of ourselves might be, as all that we have created will remain affecting us subconsciously until we deal with it. We were creeping into the latter part of the evening now. It surely was quite the information overload, not just for the content, which incorporated aliens, reptilians, other worlds, and guides, but for the bombshell that knowledge never before learned can cause. It would require much integration and consideration time. Maybe Lindsay would dismiss it all, but the seed had been planted, and her real self would be nagging and nudging her over the weeks to come, as it attempted to encourage the little literal self of Lindsay to accept this. So I pressed on, determined to get in just a few more dream experiences before the evening came to a close. Then, Kevin. Before I went to sleep, I was reading a new book, number 7, in fact, of the 9 new books Dwayne had written and presented to the world. In them, he reveals his experiences, explorations, and adventures that take him all across and through creation and to the 7th level and the years beyond. I have often found that reading a new book before bed can even more effectively stimulate dreams and the recall of them, and coupled with the new you song, it makes for a very potent combination and real side experiences. On the cover of the new book is a depiction of the universal guides. I happen to notice how very vibrant they seem to be, even though they were portrayed in picture form, and my eyes remained fixated upon them for a number of minutes before I went to sleep. As I slipped under, I would not have communication or contact with the guides, but I received impressions from them, and my last thoughts were this, that I may well have a dream of significance, and so I prepared my focus as best as I was able, that I might pay extra attention. I emerged into a very delightful, pleasing to the senses setting, very colourful, almost like a magical world. Also, there were individuals who were equally as charming and hospitable, so all in all, a very nice spot indeed. As I was drinking in the exquisite scenery, my attention was seized by impressions again that I was receiving from a guide. Once again, no words or visual interaction, and roughly converting the impressions into dialogue for the literal explaining of what was transmitted, I was effectively told that, although this was a nice place, is this as far as I wanted to go? So this suggested then that this was an area in creation only, and was not the real universes, the 7th level. I would communicate via impressions, requesting a confirmation of my suspicions, and they were thus confirmed from the guide. I then engaged in dialogue with the inhabitants of this charming spot. They were rather perplexed, as I explained to them of my intention not to remain. For them, it seemed, this was the greatest place imaginable, and admittedly, it was very much like one would imagine a paradise or a heaven to be. It's clear they had no knowledge of the real universes beyond creation, and the place they had chosen for themselves was indeed very delightful, and it was quite inconceivable for them that anywhere could be better than this, for this was the ultimate expression of being as far as they were concerned. As I awoke from this dream, it is my practice to arise from sleep gradually, as demonstrations and experiences can continue on from the real side on the physical level, if I remain in a state between sleep and being fully awake. The guides often will effect alterations to my room to emphasize a point they are trying to share, or provide additional information and visual confirmations. All sorts of phenomena can occur. It doesn't necessarily always make sense to my literal self, but at least while in this between sleep state, I can perceive it, and if I keep my mental and emotional vehicles at bay, It's more likely I will understand what I am shown, as I am then in my state of awareness. Sometimes I might even return to sleep to replay the dream and see any details that may have escaped me or I had overlooked, and on occasion individuals may follow me from the real side and momentarily, or sometimes longer, manifest in my room. As an example, I have two wooden staffs that I have propped against my wardrobe in my field of vision from where I lay. They will frequently, during the maintenance of this in-between state, change colour and shape, and this seems to make sense to my real self. And if I am in a better place of awareness, sometimes I can bring the information, or the vague notions these changes imply, to my little self. On this occasion, a couple of figurines were altered, presumably by a guide. And the figurines adopt general werewolf-like poses, for indeed they are werewolf figurines. But on this occasion, they were no longer werewolves. One was a bearded robed individual that I took to be a guide. Maybe the guide I was with in the dream and the other seemed to be me. So it was a visual, a physical level of manipulation to reinforce that I had, yes, been with a guide and we had communicated. Not only that, but on the wallpaper above the heads of the figurines was the number 7. I had never noticed this before, but the 7 can clearly be seen as part of the pattern in the wallpaper. I understand that people can see anything they want in patterns, typically faces, but nevertheless, the 7 is very apparent, if unintentional, part of the design. So just like the 7th level, the 7 on the wallpaper was always present, I just hadn't the awareness to perceive it until now. And the 7 was a confirmation again of what the dream was conveying. The place I found myself in was not the 7th level, and so it was a comparison. To know what the real universes are not is to be able to perceive better what they are and recognize them. The physical demonstration was maintained as long as I remained in this state, and then I awoke fully. I had to marvel at the creative genius of the guides to provide an extension demonstration by utilizing the very features and ornaments in my room. I am used to remaining in this in-between state between sleep and wakefulness, as it was part of my practice to facilitate lucid dreaming and astral projections when I used to do them. And so it's conceivable that the guides, aware of this ability that I still practice, the state of being in between sleep and wakefulness, they will take advantage of this state to further enhance their demonstrations. Lindsay was tactfully opening her jaws as wide as she was able and yawning to the extent that a planet could have been inserted. A subtle indication, maybe, that she had heard enough for one evening and wanted to return to her home and, perchance, sing the new you song, as hopefully I'd given her enough incentive through the dream-telling. Peter was dozing off too in his chair, and Gwen had managed to attach her knitting somehow to one of the dog's tails. The other dog was stealing what remained of Peter's unguarded sandwich as he slumbered. Nevertheless, I raised a finger and proclaimed there was one more dream to relay. Peter snapped back into wakefulness and secured what remained of his sandwich. Gwen managed to extricate the dog from her knitting, and Lindsay seated herself again. So the scene was set. Then, Kevin, I was once again on a spying mission. Only this time reptilians were not the targets. I was not with the group that I tend to spend many dreams with, but I was with an accomplice nonetheless, when Gwen was there and seemingly up for a little snooping. Either that, or I dragged her along for the adventure. Either way, there she was. There was a place where ill-intended witches, no-gooders and dastardly individuals were assembling, perhaps to scheme and plot further machinations for the detriment of others. Not a typical vantage point for the purposes of spying was chosen, but I thought rather unique, and I was all for originality, for I chose a large rock. And especially as we had the ability, it would seem, to move through seemingly solid objects, one of the more liberating aspects of being beyond the physical. That is why we chose the large rock that was present at the gathering, large enough to accommodate us both, and inside we hid and waited, and as the witches gathered, we listened and observed as they schemed and plotted. Oh yes, not only could we sit within the confines of this rock, we could hear and see out of it also, for the witches were unable to. A little like, I suppose, one of those one-way mirrors that you find with police interrogation rooms. The detectives can observe and see the prisoner under question, but to the prisoner it's simply a mirror. Some of the witches became aware of our presence, despite the fact that we were invisible to them, concealed within inside the rock. No fools they, and began to build up their magics to unveil our position. Naturally, this wouldn't work out very good for us. I imagine the prospect of being turned into a toad didn't sit well with Gwen. But there was no need to fret or get Gwen a lily pad in preparation for her possible toad transformation. We teleported from the witch's clutches to safe haven, and they were denied. It occurred to me that it was possibly Joni and her band of witches who we were spying upon. The teleportation ability was something else available on the real side. I found that were I to build up energy within myself and focus on a location, there I would go. Before the dream came to a conclusion, we took the time to resolve what seemed to be a dispute of a kind between two groups of beings. Bipedal cat and bear-like individuals had grievances of a kind. We were effective in intervening and restoring diplomacy and peace. So all in all, a good night's work, a successful spying mission and escape, and a settling of a dispute between two rival species. Lindsay was curious as to what I was doing, poking my nose into other individuals' affairs, but I assured her this is all part of the process of stepping up and taking part, both on the physical and on the real side, to ruffle a few feathers at times, to get people's attention, spread the information. It certainly wasn't a passive process, and the more one interjected oneself into life, the more awareness was stimulated, and others too would benefit from one's involvement. It's not only the Earth that is in a dire situation due to all the agreements and control, it's happening throughout creation, and everything is imploding on itself. Just like the black holes that are manifesting everywhere, they are an indication of the implosion and constricting of awareness. So, the new presentation is providing a shortcut to supersede the imploding creation. And so it certainly is encouraged to get out and about and do just that, to cause a little pause in the usual routines and la-la lands that all these individuals throughout creation have chosen for themselves. And for myself and others that take on the adventure, we move forward rather than get stuck with an idea or at a point in the process and fall back. It's about being the risk taker, daring to do what you've never done before, breaking routine and habit, and your created and rigid literalistic view of everything. But naturally, the dark forces don't like this, as I bother them and agitate other individuals into becoming more aware. The witches, as in this dream, were an example, an expression of the dark forces. They have a right to create and choose what they will, and they certainly don't like being interrupted and being spied upon, but we have the right to have our adventures too. And that wrapped it up for the evening. The last dream was recounted. What Lindsay would make of it would be up to her. Of course, the real Lindsay, who is with the Is, recognised and acknowledged what was heard here, but the little personal self would need to get on board with it, and that was never a guarantee. It would be her choice then, where she went from here. Endless possibilities existed in creation, and the only limitations are those we set and decide for ourselves. she had been opened up to a bigger stage than she perhaps realised. The vastness of creation alone cannot be underestimated, but generally it is by the little view from the physical self. As she made her way to the door, I would remind her to sing the new you, 15 or so minutes before sleep, and watch her dream visions. They were the doorway to amazing possibilities, but a doorway she had to approach and walk through.